What's up, friends? Welcome to another episode of the Tables, Tailgates, and Top Loaders podcast. I'm your host, TB. So happy to have you here for this episode of the Three T's. Lots to talk about. Let's not waste any more time. Let's dive right in. Bills Mafia, you are first up this week. How the heck are you feeling? Is it safe to say that this could be probably the most worried and upset we have ever been coming off a, 31-point victory? So in case you missed it, in case you were living under a rock, the Bills defeated the Carolina Panthers 40-9 on Sunday afternoon in Charlotte, North Carolina, in front of a stadium that was at least 50% filled with Bills fans. It was kind of crazy. Some of the numbers, maybe it was 60, 65%. Crazy turnout by Mafia, but we always travel well down there. I know a lot of actual residents of the Charlotte area are Bills fans, so it was not a surprise. But you would think that winning a game by 30 points would have people in a good place. So the Panthers, we talked about this on the game preview, they were coming in riding a three-game winning streak. And their specialty up to this point in the season was they had an extremely strong run game and they had a great interior defensive line. So they had the ability to stop the run game. And well, we completely destroyed the narrative of what this team, the Panthers team, were bringing to the table. We completely destroyed it by James Cook. And that's where I want to start. That's where I want to start because I want to start on a good note. And I'm going to try to hold it together during this Bills portion without losing it. But let's start with the good. And that is, of course, none other than James Cook. And the way I see it, this game is the line in the sand for all the James Cook doubters. As far as I'm concerned, at this point in time, in this point in history, you have no leg to stand on now. None. Okay, so I don't want to hear another word on James Cook, on his talent, on the contract extension. I'm tired of it. I don't want to hear it anymore. He finished the game with 216 yards on the ground. And most of that was in the first half alone. So I believe that what I heard say was this is the third most rushing yards all time in Bills history. Third most of all time. Had this game been close and he actually was needed to play the whole game, it's quite possible he would have broken the all-time NFL record for yards in a game. That record held by Adrian Peterson, Minnesota Vikings, 296 yards. So he finished, 80 yards shy of that all-time record, and he didn't play in the entire, most of the second half. I think he hit he got to 200 and then they essentially benched him because the game was over. So there's no doubt in my mind he would have at least come close if this game was competitive. So he would have smashed that. But it doesn't matter. He was great. So I don't want to hear any more nonsense talk about how he's just another running back. It's absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. If you look at the season, the whole NFL, statistically, he's only behind Jonathan Taylor for rushing yards right now. And if you look at it, I think Taylor's just about 100 yards ahead of Cook on the leader chart, the leaderboard. And that's because Taylor has played one more game than Cook. So, yeah, he's a top three back this season, folks. There's no way that you can argue this point. He is fan-freaking-tastic. His vision is great. He runs with patience. He has balance, but yet he is explosive. He is legitimately, right now, where the season sits, he is a legitimate MVP candidate right now. I know running backs really don't have a shot, but he's putting up monster numbers, and the contrast between him and the other two backs on this Bills team is crazy. So you see what you get when Cook is on the field. When Ray Davis or Ty Johnson gets the ball, you can physically see a difference. It's blatantly obvious, the downgrade when these other two guys get in the game. I don't know what's going on with Ray Davis and Ty. I feel like they're a step slower this year. Ray Davis used to be this power running back, and I just don't see any of that anymore. And Johnson used to be this quick cut receiver out of the backfield that you could have to worry about if you're opposing defense, that he could, you know, run certain wide receiver routes and be a threat to catch the ball. I don't see any of that from these two guys this year. Absolutely zero. So it's blatantly obvious Cook is the man. And right now, if you ask me, James Cook is the reason we are 5-2. I hate to break it to you. If he was not on this team, oh my goodness, we would be in some real freaking trouble this year. And this brings me back to my opening comment about how upset and worried people were following this 30-point victory. Because now we get to talk about the passing game, folks. The passing game, let's be honest, let's lay all the cards out on the table. It is completely broken. Broken. The passing game is currently made up of one play. Are you ready for this one play? It is throw a quick one-yard pass to Khalil Shakir near the line of scrimmage, and then we fall to our knees and pray. We pray. We close our eyes. We pray that he can make something happen. I'm watching this game in astonishment because I don't know what has happened to this team. Most of Josh Allen's throws, the reigning MVP, by the way, and I'm going to keep going back to this point, the reigning MVP is throwing the ball within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. 5 yards. What was the offseason plan? Josh freaking Palmer, the Chargers' number 3 wide receiver. He was to be the answer. Well, we get to see him for just about, what, two plays against the Falcons, and he catches 60 yards, two catches for 60 yards, and, well, he's hurt. Just like the rest of these clowns, he can't get on the field. Maybe he can help. Maybe he can't. Maybe he's the answer, but right now, he's not on the field, so no one knows if Palmer can help this team at all. What's next? What else we got? Dalton Kincaid. He was supposed to be the man to open up the middle of the field, be a dynamic pass catcher, up the seams, in the middle. Well, when he can play, we've seen this. When he can play, when he's on the field, he's awesome. He's awesome. But guess what? He's also hurt. So he's got the oblique thing. And in this game, he was clearly on a snap count. So he was hardly ever on the field. So you take your two alleged top pass catchers in Josh Palmer and Dalton Kincaid. You take them off the field and all you have left to do is throw it to Shakir at the line of scrimmage and pray he can break 11 tackles and get to the end zone. It's, man, I'm gonna try to keep it together. The most telling play of this game was this was the second quarter. This was a 3rd and 6, right? So what had happened the previous play? We had a 3rd and 1. We were going to run the snowplow, tush push, AKA whatever the hell you want to call it. And what happens? None other than Curtis Samuel, who can never be in the game because he's never healthy. He is called for a illegal formation penalty. And why, do you ask, is Curtis Samuel, of all people, called for an illegal formation penalty? Because he's never available to play the game. There's no reps. There's nothing with this guy. He's either hurt or he's on the field contributing nothing. So here we go, 3rd and 1. And now Samuel takes a penalty. Now we're in a 3rd and 6. But let's get back to the play. Snap the ball. And what does Josh do? He literally scrambles around for 10 freaking seconds, looking, begging. He's practically begging someone to get open. And ultimately, now this is full blame on Josh here, but ultimately he takes a 16-yard sack. He should have thrown the ball away. There is no doubt in anyone's mind watching this game. I don't care if you've never seen football before. You knew that's not right. He shouldn't have held onto the ball that way and run backwards for 16 yards, but he takes a 16-yard sack. And you're telling me in the 10 seconds that it took to sack him, no one can break loose or get open on the field? No one. Oh, man. It's so frustrating. And it's that over and over and over again. And you know what we saw in the game on Sunday? When somebody finally does get open, Josh is literally shocked. He's shocked. I mean, there's a play later in the game when Elijah Moore is wide open. There's not a defensive player within 10 yards of him. He is wide open. Josh is so shocked that he literally launches the ball out of bounds. He's like, oh my God, he's open. Somebody's finally open. Let me get it to him. And then he goes full, what is it? Who's Uncle Rico, who then launches the football over the mountain, right? He goes full Uncle Rico mode. So, yeah, we can place a lot of the blame on the reigning MVP because he just hasn't played well. We need to be honest about that. He has not played well. But also, the receivers have never been this bad, folks. Never. And here's the thing. I try to listen to the post-game press conferences. I try to hear the coordinators and the head coach talk about these games a day or two removed from the actual game. So I really try to take their words and really listen to what they're saying. But it seems like everyone knows what's going on except Brandon Bean and Joe Brady. Even Coach McDermott, even Sean McDermott makes post-game comments suggesting that the offense needs to have balance. They need to have balance. Yeah, it's great that James Cook rushed for 216 and the offensive line established their dominance and trucked them the whole time. But when we needed it, there was zero passing game to be found. And McDermott makes it clear that in order to be successful, there needs to be a balance to the offense. And it's non-existent right now. They have to be able to rely on the passing game when it's needed in the game. They have to be. So what does Joe Brady do? Because here I am thinking Joe Brady's going to come forward and be like, yeah, there's a lot to clean up. We got a lot of problems. He has a press conference, and then he goes on to say that there's no problem at all with the passing game. There's literally no problem at all. Really? Joe, what the hell are you watching? Were you also closing your eyes every time the pass is made to Shakir? Were you hitting your knees praying? Are you praying with the rest of us that one player on the team can break 10, 11 tackles and take it to the house? Because what are you watching that you're telling me there's no problems with the passing game? He said the game flow, meaning Sunday alone, the game flow meant we didn't need to pass. Nonsense. You know what else he said? He said, well, the passing game was there when we needed it against the Ravens, and the passing game was just fine against Baltimore. That was week one. He tells us that we didn't need the passing game because the game flow meant we didn't need to pass the ball. Nonsense. Now, I get it. James Cook literally saved your ass. But the few times he didn't rip off a 6, 7, 8, 12-yard run a pop, the few times he didn't, and now they're stuck behind the sticks and found themselves in third and long situations, what happened? They had no chance. No chance at all to complete a pass. It is broken, folks. It's broken. Allen looks frustrated, despite we heard the report come out that his grandma called him and said, hey, you're not looking like you're having any fun. You need to start smiling and playing like you did years ago and start having fun. Josh Allen looks way off this year. Way off. He doesn't look like he's happy. And I think it's a byproduct of simply not being able to trust a single person in the passing game. He can't trust them to stay healthy. He can't trust them to get on the field. And when they are on the field, he can't trust them to be open and run the right routes. There was one play, and I can't remember the wide receiver. I'm seeing Dawson Knox yell at another receiver because they're not in the right spot on the formation. And I'm like, what is going on with these guys? And then, oh my goodness. I don't know what to say. But some of the things I'm hearing from these press conferences, it's crazy to me. It's so crazy. And it's so frustrating because you can see signs of the defense slowly rounding into form. And it's exciting, right? You can see the impact some of the new and young talent can have on the defensive side of the ball. This was crystal freaking clear on Sunday. This is one of the keys to the game, one of the X factors, one of the things I was excited about in my game preview. I talked about Hoyt and Ogunjobi, right? I was super excited for them to hit the ground running. I said they were going to play with a lot of aggression. They got a lot of pent-up energy, and they're going to make an instant impact. And boy, did they freaking ball out. Hoyt was an immediate impact player on the defensive side of the ball. He was dynamic, and he made an immediate impact. It was so cool watching him line up literally all over the line. He was standing up. He was down a three-point stance. He was pacing around. It was crazy. It was like a rabid dog just trying to get after it. And I'm like, dude, this guy can freaking ball. It was awesome. He played with so much energy, so much juice. He brought such another dynamic to this defense. It was awesome to see. Ogunjobi, stable, solid presence to the line. I'm talking solid, dependable play. It absolutely sucks that Ed Oliver got hurt, torn bicep, probably done for at least the regular season. Maybe we get him if we make a deep playoff run, but that ain't looking too great. But can you imagine Ed Oliver paired up with these new defensive players and we have a full complement of our defense playing together and gelling over the second half of the year? There's excitement there. Maxwell Hairston, he played just under half the snaps on defense. You can clearly see in, 20 some snaps he played, you can clearly see why he was the number one pick. This dude is electric. His speed is off the charts. It's awesome. And this is exactly what we needed. Fresh, young, energy, speed, juice. Jordan Hancock, they put him in at safety. They were flipping back and forth. It was the Jordan and Jordan show at free safety. He brings speed to the table. And it was so refreshing to see new guys who can run fast. They were just getting after it. It's so awesome. We weren't giving them these 10, 15, 20-yard cushions because we were worried that these guys were going to blow by us. So refreshing to see speed on the defensive side of the ball. Now, I know we have a ways to go. I know I'm trying not to get ahead of myself on the defensive side, because I do recognize that we're playing Andy Dalton and the Panthers, and we completely shut down their running game, and we forced Dalton to have probably one of his worst games ever. And Andy Dalton looked every bit the part of a 15-year quarterback that just looked completely out of his league. So I'm trying to pace myself and not get way ahead, but you can see where the improvements can be made with the pieces that we actually have. Now, yeah, we might need to pick up a defensive line player via trade or free agency to offset the Oliver injury. And we can't replace Oliver, but adding these two guys to the line, it helps a lot. It goes a long way. And then hopefully if Milano comes back and Bernard fixes his ankle and we don't have to rely on Trey White for 95% of the snaps and Taylor Rapp, the addition of subtraction of Taylor Rapp is night and day. But offensively, tell me where the improvements can come from that are on the roster or that are currently sitting on the practice squad. You want to tell me Gabe Davis? Is he the answer? I don't know, because I don't know. He was a downfield threat. He was one of Josh's most trusted deep ball receivers. But can he do it? Is he healthy? Is his knee gonna hold up? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. Is Gabe Davis the answer to our receiving woes? I don't think so. He had trouble getting open 3 years ago. I heard a caller on a radio show complain because they thought Tyrell Shavers hasn't been given a fair shake and that he could be the answer. And I'm like, oh boy, Mafia, we are in trouble if we think Tyrell Shavers is the answer. What are you watching? I've seen he's been in the games and he doesn't do anything. He was one of the last guys to make the team. I mean, we go back all the way to Hard Knocks and HBO. And he was a bubble player. And he can't get open either. But the one that really frustrates me is Keon Coleman. And I'm like, man, I hate talking about Keon. I had such high hopes for him, such high expectations. I thought there was a lot of promise, a lot. And I'm not writing him off yet just because this year hasn't gone to expectation. I don't want to do that. But right now, it is not working. He is not working. And it's extremely frustrating when I'm listening to Joe Brady saying in his press conference the other day that Keon Coleman just played his best game. He literally said Keon Coleman played his best game. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? And I'm really starting to wonder if Joe Brady is delusional. Is he like losing his mind? Does he need to be committed? Or is he just out there protecting his guys? It could be either one. It could go either way, but I'm not sure which is worse at this point, because at some point you need to hold your players accountable. Keon Coleman is no longer a rookie, and I get it. He missed some games last year with some injury stuff, but you should expect players to make improvements. I'm not expecting them to be a Pro Bowler, but you should see where he can contribute to this team. And outside of run blocking for James Cook, and that's what Joe Brady leaned on. Oh, it was his best game as a receiver because he was a great run blocker. I don't need him to be a run blocker. I need him to catch the freaking ball and be an offensive threat and a weapon for the reigning MVP of the freaking NFL. I need you to get open because, oh my goodness. Let's look at the offensive weapons that we now have. If Josh Palmer is not on the field, who do we got next? Well, we already talked about it. Dalton Kincaid. Well, if he's not on the field, who do we got next? Okay, how about Khalil Shakir? Well, we talked about what the play call is with him. Throw it to him at the line and pray, right? Okay, well, thank God he's able to do that occasionally. He took an awesome one to the house. But let's talk about the other guys. How are we feeling about Elijah Moore? Anyone? Everyone thought that was a good answer. How are we feeling about that? Curtis Samuel, he's non-existent. I don't know which of those two is going to suit up week to week. Who's even going to be active on game day? And then you have Tyrell Shavers. So right there, you have Keon Coleman, Elijah Moore, Curtis Samuel, and Tyrell Shavers. Do any of them need to be on the team right now? Obviously, we're going to keep Keon because this is his second year. And I really think like that needs to be a work in progress. But the rest of them? Are you kidding me? So we have a cast off from the Chargers. Josh Palmer is supposed to be our savior. He was their number 3 wide receiver. He's now what? Our number 1? Or is it Dalton Kincaid? Okay, well, your two number one wide receiver options are can't get on the field, and now you have Khalil Shakir. We're at a turning point here. We are at a turning point, and I got to tell you, the natives are growing more and more restless, folks. If you remember, if you go all the way back to the offseason, there was this huge fiasco with Buffalo local radio and Brandon Bean, where he calls in and he gets all bent about how they accused him of not, you know, helping the wide receiver room, and he loses his mind, right? And he defends the room, and he's like, oh, we were a great offense last year, and blah, 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 blah. You could see the cracks in this theory, this everybody eats nonsense last year, and he just flat out refused to do anything to get Josh, the reigning MVP, more talent, more weapons, more offensive firepower. So now, what has he done? He's essentially backed himself completely into a corner. Well, my scenario, throw this everybody eats in the freaking dumpster. I am so sick and tired of it. I was bought in last year. You know, I drank the freaking Kool-Aid, but now I don't want to ever hear the phrase everybody eats ever again. I'm watching Monday Night Football. I sat down to watch Monday Night Football last night. Kansas City against Washington, right? Before the game even starts, Patty Mahomes, everyone's favorite freaking Patty Mahomes, he's interviewed before the game. And what does he say? He mentions the phrase everybody eats. And I think I threw up in my mouth. Right? I think I did. And I turn to my wife. I go, what the hell did he just say? Did he really just say everybody eats? Everyone knows. Everyone in the league knows this is the Bills' motto for their offense because they don't have a true number one pass catcher. Well, now I never, ever want to hear that phrase again, ever, in regards to the Buffalo Bills passing offense. Everybody eats. No one is eating. I talked about this before. No one is eating. They are all starving, and they will continue to starve because they can't get open. And when they do get open, on the rare occasion, it's like a mirage in the desert. Josh thinks they're open, and so he launches it into the next galaxy. Oh my goodness. So now Brandon Bean has less than a week. He's got a week to make something happen, or there literally could be mutiny on his hands. The fan base is going to lose their collective freaking minds if he doesn't get Josh more weapons. And like I said, everyone sees this. Everyone. Everyone. So he's got two choices. Is he going to be stubborn and go down with the Titanic, go down with this sinking ship, or is he going to push away his pride and get to work and try to fix this offense? As I said before, do whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. Come on, Brandon Bean. Do whatever it freaking takes. What are you waiting for? You knew the trade deadline was coming. You knew this was happening. And you knew Kansas City was next up. At this point, go to New Orleans. See if we can get a package deal. Go get Olave and Shahid. Tell me, New Orleans, who just benched awesome Spencer Rattler. Tell me, what do you want for this pair of wide receivers who are allegedly on the trade block? I will take them both right now, not next week at the deadline, not next Tuesday at 4 o'clock or whenever the hell it is, right this freaking second. You're telling me Brian Thomas Jr. is available? And the Jags are stupid enough to trade their number one pick? What does it take? What does it take? The Dolphins are out of it and they're allegedly shopping Jalen Waddle. What does it take? I don't care what the cost is anymore. I don't care. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We can't stockpile draft picks because we can't seem to get them right half the time anyway. Deion Walker is going to literally be, and hopefully Maxwell Harris didn't, but your track record of hitting with a good percentage is not good, Bob. Right. And this is the sad part. It's already too late for the Chiefs game. It's already too late. And I have a bad, bad feeling about this one. A bad feeling. The stress meter, it's already through the roof. But I'm not even going to get to that because I'll deal with that when I get to the game preview later this week. But he has wasted enough time. Get impact receivers in the building now before it's too late. You have a fan base that is begging you to stop wasting Allen's career. Surround him with talent on that side of the ball. Get him more offensive weapons. I don't care about draft picks anymore. Trade them all. Who was the GM of the Rams, right? His famous quote was, F them picks. Like, it worked out well for them, didn't it? It worked out well for them. They won. They celebrated. They were the last team to celebrate at the end of the year. They won the freaking Lombardi Trophy. That's all I care about at this point in my life. Win it all. Win it all. Brandon Bean, do what it takes. Like I said, there's going to be a freaking mutiny. And it's really crazy to talk like this when we are 5-2 and coming off the heels of a 40-9 victory. But we got the Chiefs. We got the Chiefs. Anyone want to tell me the Chiefs aren't looking like a juggernaut again? The Chiefs and the refs and Arrowhead, which is where every game they ever play is held. I don't know. It's so frustrating. Yeah, we can beat these lower level teams, but you keep running the show like this, when we get to the playoffs, there's no chance we beat some of these upper tier teams. And there's more teams added to the mix now. So it's not just us and the Ravens and the Chiefs. We were setting ourselves up this year for such success, and we have freaking blown it. Oh my gosh. I don't know. I don't know what this fan base is going to do if Brandon Bean sits on his hands in the next 7 days and does not go get weapons. Can you imagine if he pulls some fourth wide receiver from some team for like a sixth or seventh round pick, and he's added to the Elijah Moore, Tyrell Shavers category of receiver? So some other bum that is exactly like these other guys. Can you imagine if that's the move? We're all going to lose our minds. We're all going to lose our minds. And he's going to go, well, this is what you wanted. You wanted me to go get more weapons. It's not my fault they can't get open. I don't know. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, let's move on to the tables portion of the show. Wrestling Marks, how the heck are you feeling? We are getting ready, getting set up for Saturday night's main event coming up this Saturday. It's going to feature a match between CM Punk and Jey Uso. This is for the recently vacated title. Obviously, this is the belt that was stripped from Seth Rollins. He suffered an injury at Crown Jewel against Cody Rhodes. It was crazy. It's been an interesting journey to get to this point. I can't tell you I'm exactly thrilled with the participants. And frankly, I am not sure how this is going to play out. I don't know which way this is going to go. Does Jey win? Does he keep leaning into his evil tendencies? Obviously, he threw his brother out of the Battle Royal the other day. I don't know. Maybe he needs to go full-scale heel. I came up with this idea a while back that you turn Jey complete heel and you team him with a returning Gunther. I still want to see this. And maybe it's on the table. Maybe Trips heard that podcast and he's like, oh, that's a brilliant idea. That would be awesome. So what better way to do it than on Saturday night's main event? You have a returning Gunther. Help Jey. He turns heel. He takes out CM Punk. Jey gets the belt. He's now a bad guy. And now you instantly have a Punk versus Gunther feud. I would love to see that at Survivor Series. And they're off and running. That would be sick. If you ask me, I would love to freaking see that. Or do they play it safe? Do they give it to CM Punk? Which, if you ask me, really doesn't make a lot of sense. You would think CM Punk winning the belt after such a long time would be a bigger moment. I know he obviously won it right before the cash-in, but he had it for like, what, 5 seconds? So I'm not really sure how this goes. Maybe there is no finish. Maybe they keep kicking the can down the road and because they can't figure out a way to figure out this story and how it plays out. I do like what Braun and Braun are doing. Maybe they interfere. They cost them both the match. Who knows? But a few things I want to get to, a few things I want to point out for some of the recent shows. The other week, there was a tag match between Judgment Day, your tag champs, Finn and JD, and they went up against AJ Styles and Dragon Lee. This match was awesome. These four, I mean, they crushed it. Four awesome wrestlers. They put on a freaking show. I thought it was a great, cool choice to have AJ and Dragon win. And now they're setting this up. So I think next Monday night on Raw, they're going to have a rematch. So good on them. It's going to be crazy. I loved that match. I think AJ's doing great work. Obviously, we talked about his match with John Cena, one of the last PLEs. And I thought that was one of my favorite matches ever. So good stuff. I like what they got going there. Dirty Dom. If you're not enjoying the work Dirty Dom is putting in, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this is why wrestling is fun. The stuff he's doing, his matches, his segments, it's gold, right? Because he puts a little bit of everything in there. He's a pretty good wrestler. He does his little slime ball stuff, you know, just like, you know, his legitimate father, Eddie Guerrero. But his narrow escapes, the way he cheats, and what he's doing, he's slowly growing his fan base week after week, promo after promo, match after match. This is a super awesome, super slow, organic following that is gathering steam. And sooner or later, people are going to want to see him be world champion. And I, for one, am completely on board. I love the work he's doing. I think it's fantastic. Plus, he got a crazy neck tattoo. So you add that to the mix and it gives him another few bonus points. What else is happening? This Drew and Cody fiasco. I'm sorry. I don't care whatsoever. I'm the Cody thing, I don't care. And I talked about this before. Drew McIntyre, every time he's in a big match, every time he's in a marquee match for the title or in some big feud, he never wins. So the way I see this Saturday night's main event match between him and Cody, Drew has zero chance to win. Zero chance. What they need to do is shock the world, give Drew the belt, you know, mix this stuff up a little bit. Cody, he's freaking wearing on me. He's the soundbite. His music kicks, I get super excited for 5 seconds, and then I don't want to see him anymore. I just don't care at all. His matches do nothing for me. I appreciated the match with Seth Rollins because I'm such a huge Seth Rollins mark, but after that, like, I don't want to see this because I know Drew has no chance to win. But anyway, moving on. The women's tag match that was on Monday Night Raw was phenomenal. This was the main event of the show. Charlotte and Alexa are your women's tag champs, and they went up against Lyra and Bayley for the belts. I love this team of Lyra and Bayley. They're doing fantastic work. I love the crazy Bayley. Lyra is kind of feeding into it. She's doing great work, and I said this before when she was doing the solo stuff with Becky Lynch. She has come a long way. She's a fantastic addition to this roster that keeps getting better and better. The women's roster, I got to tell you, I'm finding myself enjoying and wanting to watch the segments and the matches involving the women way more than I am with the men because they're just better and they're more entertaining. Some of the Jay stuff, like, I just don't care about. The Cody stuff, I don't care about. Charlotte, Alexa, love them. Lyra, Bayley, love it. This match was fire. As I said before, these two is a great pairing, and they showed out on Monday Night Raw. They were doing great stuff in the ring, great workers, all four of them. This was a fantastic, fantastic match. I want to see this match again. Give me more. Or as the the old Ryback used to say, feed me more. And then at the very end, we have the Kabuki Warriors getting thrown into the mix, and they kind of jumped everybody. I am all on board for this. Speaking of the Kabuki Warriors, Asuka, this was crazy. I gotta talk about this for a second. On Monday Night Raw, what they did, they showed a special vignette that showcased her 10-year WWE career and her highlights, and it was extremely well done. I give them props. Some of these vignettes and these promo packages they do, I don't know who does this stuff, but it's like some of the best TV you could see. Like, if you could just put a show together of just having people watch these vignettes, it's awesome. Like, this is some of the stuff that I keep going back to when I talk about old school nostalgia and things I love about wrestling. Like, there's certain packages, promo packages, video packages that I remember forever. And I love when they do stuff like this. But anyway, getting back, I'm getting sidetracked. They did this. It was a video package highlighting this 10-year career. And it was really, really well done. Well, the rumor is that this came as a direct response to comments made by none other than one of my favorite garbage wrestlers of all time, Bill Goldberg. So allegedly, and well, not allegedly, because I went on and read it, he ran his mouth about how his undefeated streak was allowed to be broken by what he called, quote, some girl at WWE, end quote. Well, that's some girl, of course. He was referring to Asuka. If you don't know how I feel about this miserable human being, please go back, listen to episode 5 of the 3 T's, and you will know definitively where I stand at the end of that episode. But, oh my goodness, like, I even offered to buy him a house in Saudi Arabia. It was one of my favorite If Money Were No Object by the Week segments. I offered to send him and his family to Saudi Arabia where he could live full time because I know he loves the country so much because he's taken so much of their money, but he never called me. He never took me up on that offer. I'm sorry. I can't freaking stand this guy. I can't stand him. And the fact that after all his career, all he's done in his career, he still finds the need to get on social media and take shots at Asuka of all people, just shows you the type of person he is. He's a freaking tool bag. I can't stand him. Historically, not many people ever liked him or liked working with him, and his true colors are just shining through. So Asuka, to her credit, she came on her own socials and responded by saying she's not bothered by the comments at all and that he's entitled to his own perspective on things. So I give her mad props. She came out. She took the high road. I want WWE to be completely done with this clown. Obviously, he had his retirement match earlier in the year against Gunther. And I'm so sick and tired of Bill Goldberg. I need him to go away. That he's just ridiculous. Lastly, the last thing I want to talk about is this Maxxine Dupri, Becky Lynch story. This saga has been going on for a couple weeks now. It's been getting better and better every week. And Maxine, I give her props. She is improving with each and every match. And these two, they have great chemistry together. Becky weaseled out of the last match. She got herself DQ'd. She hit her with the title. And you just find her getting more and more frustrated during these matches because Maxine's getting better and she's sticking with her. And the matches are going longer and longer. And they're really doing well together. So she gets herself DQ'd. Obviously, Adam Pearce just granted Maxine one more match sometime in the future. Obviously, this is going to be a title match. It would not shock me at all if they make the switch and if they give Maxine a run with the IC belt. But this just shows you the work that Becky Lynch is doing now, and it shows you that she is just pure freaking gold. She is making every single segment she is in absolutely great. You know, I've said this before, she's been one of my favorites. I was at WrestleMania 35 when Becky Two Belts was created and she won the main event against Charlotte and Ronda Rousey. Awesome, cool moment to be at. She's one of my all-time favorites, but every segment she's in is great. After this match with Maxine, she's seen later backstage having this interaction with Paul Heyman, and obviously this is fresh off of the Vision turning against her husband Seth Rollins the week before. She was brilliant in this segment. She gets in real close. She grabs him by the necktie. She's like whispering all these threats in his ear. It's just awesome. And how can anyone not see how great she is for the company? It's like, she's just great. And I mean, I'm not the only one saying it. Sports Illustrated is saying it. I love when she incorporates that line. She's just, her mic work is just continue to improve. And now it's clear she's helping to bring along new talent, and she can work with anything, anyone, anything thrown her way. She's just crushing it. I give her props. Really, really good stuff from her. So those are the things I wanted to kind of highlight in the world of the WWE. Card marks, hobby enthusiasts, top loading fans. I'm not going to spend a ton of time, but Topps NBA 2025-2026 hit the market, and it's caused freaking chaos. It's blown up. People are going crazy over it. It's been a huge success thus far. The hobby box prices and the jumbo hobbies have doubled, if not tripled. People can't get their hands on them. Retail is doing extremely well. People are posting their openings all over the place. I've watched YouTube video after YouTube video, basically diving into each and every format. I've watched people open hobbies, jumbo hobbies, blaster boxes, value boxes, as you call them, fat packs. I've seen them open the hangers. It's a really cool product. I know there's always a portion of the market, always a portion of the industry that's always going to crap on paper products and how, oh my gosh, Topps overproduced this. Well, you know what? It's clear people are super excited that Topps has the NBA license back because people are buying it. They're buying it. They're having a good time. Everyone's having a good time. So let's just take a break. Sometimes you need a product that everyone can get their hands on, and that's okay. I'm not saying it needs to come out every 2 weeks or every month, but once in a while, and something that should be celebrated like this, let's celebrate it. Like, let's enjoy it. If you don't like it and it's not for you, fine. If you want to chase the big, you know, tens of thousands of dollars hits and go invest $600 to $800 in a Panini product, okay, you've had your chance. Topps is back. Live with it, deal with it, and whatever that means for the industry, I think it's a good thing. Like, people were jonesing to get back into the NBA because I got to be honest with you. I was a huge NBA fan in my card collecting days when I was a kid. Like, I loved collecting NBA cards. When I got back into the hobby a while back, the NBA products, they didn't interest me at all. I didn't like the way the cards looked. I've never been a fan of Panini. And so I was super excited to see this product back. I actually like the way the cards look. I have pre-ordered some of the Fanatics boxes because I'm super excited to see the potential for hits to come out of there. And yeah, people are happy. Obviously, there's always somebody crapping on it and saying, oh, what a waste of money, blah, 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 blah. Just let people enjoy what they want to enjoy at a lower price point and just leave people alone, okay? I mean, I just think it's cool. The hobby should be, first and foremost, I understand people are out there making money and it can be a business for people, but there are people that are just in the hobby for the hobby because they like collecting. And this, to be completely honest, the more I see videos, the more it gets me into this because now I am totally on board. and I want to go get some packs. I want to open some hangers. I want to go get some blasters. I can't wait for my Fanatics boxes to come in. I think they are released towards the end of November. So yeah, I'm super excited to dive back into NBA because now I'm starting to watch the game again. And so what's the problem with that? What's the problem with that? So maybe, and I'm hearing stories of a lot of people who have the same opinion as me. People who have been out of the NBA for so long, and this Topps takeover has been good for the hobby, and people are getting excited about the NBA again. And it's not all about the $50,000 Wemby auto and triple auto Olympic card, and who cares? I know people are chasing Cooper Flagg and this and that and the other, but like, let people be excited about low end products and retail, and that's okay. It's okay. Everything will be fine. So just relax and let people enjoy what they want to enjoy. But I see it as being nothing but a success. But I don't really have any more to talk about on the card market this week. I know it's a little short, and I apologize for that, but I kind of ran a little long with the Bill stuff. So we'll talk more about the card stuff next week on next week's episode. But I do appreciate everybody checking out this episode of the Three T's. If you have enjoyed this episode or any of the episodes that have come before this, do me a favor, share it with someone you know, whether they are a fellow Mafia member, a car collector, or someone who just loves that squared circle, loves professional wrestling. It doesn't matter. I'm trying to grow this one episode at a time. Please hit that follow, hit that like, leave me a review, help me build this thing together. And as always, I appreciate you all very, very much. So until next time, whether it's ripping packs, breaking tables, or dropping elbows, keep doing what you love. And as always, go Bills!